welcome to Get Coaching, the go-to podcast for new and aspiring coaches looking to master the art of coaching, speaking, and facilitation. My name is Jessica Palmer. I am a coach, speaker, and consultant, and I'm here to interview industry leaders in the coaching and personal development space to bring you inspiration and real-life tips to help you get real results with your clients. Now, if you are not a coach or speaker, you are going to gain so many benefits from listening to this podcast, so many tips and tricks that you will be able to implement into your everyday life. So let's get into this next episode. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I'm really looking forward to speaking with this next guest. We have our final guest from Forging Excalibur. We've had an amazing couple of weeks with interviewing the amazing men's coaches from Forging Excalibur. And today we are speaking with Nicholas Calabrese, who is a men's coach. And I'm really looking forward to the topic that he's wanting to explore. And without further ado, Nicholas, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became a coach, your journey of becoming a coach?
Yeah. I was thinking about this question before we started of how I'm going to answer it, because as everyone's, you know, journey through life, we go through different stages, but what are the kind of the bigger things that have happened to actually get you on, you know, the journey that you're on? So I always knew from a young age, as a teenager, that I wanted to be of service of some kind and to contribute, or to not necessarily have like a 9-to-5 job or a desk job, basically. And it came about when I was actually in India as a 16-17 year old. I did like a month of volunteering there. Wow. And it was, you know, I remember the first day I struggled a lot, because we're in this school called Diadan, which is in Calcutta, and it's one of Mother Teresa's schools. So it's for you know, intellectually disabled and physically disabled children. And the first like 2-3 hours, like I struggled like to comprehend like what was actually happening around me. And I actually had to like leave and like go on the roof of the building for like a couple of hours just to like gather myself and to, you know, you start to, as a 16-year-old, I didn't have any kind of tools or mental kind of processes on how to not deal with emotions, but process emotions. So, you know, everything just kind of came up, like, what am I doing here? Why? You know, asking myself why a lot, you know, just want to go home. But then, you know, I was able to settle. And when I came down, it was actually lunchtime. And they asked me, like, would you like to feed one of the children? And a couple of people said, like, no, don't worry about it. Like, you don't have to do it. And I was like, no, like, let's do it. And I remember I was feeding this young girl, and we were the first ones to start eating and we were the last ones to finish because of her, you know, the discomfort that she had and the difficulty she had of actually eating. And it was kind of like in those moments of feeding her, of just being calm and present, that I was like, oh, I think this is actually part of what I want to do in life. I didn't know like what or anything like that, but that was kind of the catalyst of being of service. But moving forward, like in out of school, and I kind of just fell into a job and that I was good at. And for like 8-9 years, I did that. And I kind of got further away from my purpose of not having a day job and, you know, being of service and contributing. And that was when I was like, what am I doing? You know, and I think everyone has those questions. Yeah, in my 20s, I definitely asked myself that a lot, of like, why am I actually doing this? Like, I can be doing more. So yeah, in like 2016, I just proposed to my wife, and I was like, I need some clarity around this. And I'd been in personal development for a couple of years. After I had a knee reconstruction, I started to read books and, you know, listen to podcasts a lot. And that started to get my brain ticking, like, oh, what can I actually do in life? So when I decided to propose, I was like, all right, let's actually get my shit together. let's go back to what I know I need to be doing in life and purpose. So I literally just Googled like Adelaide coach, and all of these you know, soccer coaches and sporting coaches came up, like, oh, this isn't what I want. So, you know, did like Adelaide life coaches, and found this, yeah, like a young male coach, and started working with him. And it was through that that I realized perhaps this is something I can do. And it's kind of funny how, you know, the world works. And he started to talk about NLP, and, you know, we did some stuff together in our sessions. And one week I went to the library and I borrowed a book on NLP and I started reading it. And the next session I went with him, first thing he said, without even like saying anything or asking me, he's like, so you want to become a practitioner, do you? And I didn't actually tell him I was reading this book. I didn't mention anything. And that was kind of the seed. I was like, oh, maybe I can do this. Maybe this is something, you know, that sits and aligns with myself around purpose and service and contributing to the world. And then since then, it's just been like one thing after other of getting qualifications and work, you know, workshops and books and all the rest of it. And kind of here we are 5-6 years wow. later.
Wow. What a humbling experience that must have been for you. You know, 16-year-old in India, you know, caring for these disabled people. I really can't imagine. I'm sure you left a completely changed person after that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bit of a looking back now, you know, now 16 years later, I can kind of reflect differently on my perspective. And it's such a dichotomy, because on one hand, I want to go back and help and serve them. And then on the other hand, there's a part of me which is very apathetic and think that I'm just helpless, like, what can I do, you know, like, and, you know, and that's the part of me which is almost still there, and it translates into other parts of my life as well, where it's like, what's the point? And I think a lot of it stems from my experience in India for the, you know, the 30-40 days that I was there. It was like, you just see so much and so much what's the word, like, just stuff that, you know, you don't experience here in Australia or in the Western world, really. So it's like, what can I do? But then you just kind of think past that, I guess, and you're like, well, you know, if I can help one person, you know, there's that starfish parable, you know, where the man throws one starfish into the sea. And I think that's how you just have to think, is like, just one person at a time that you can help. And then think of like the ripple effect, you know, you're helping that one person can help one person else, and then it just keeps going. So yeah, it's definitely a dichotomy of thinking back now of both sides of my experience there.
I think that piece is so important too, because a lot of coaches get in the game and they want to have this mass impact. They're like, how many people you know, they focus on quantity versus quality. And it really is, you help that one person, you're helping all of the people that are connected to that person. It is that ripple effect. It impacts so many different lives from just helping that one person. And then as you know, continue in your coaching, you know, we begin to expand our capacity to be able to hold space and to create more impact. But it is absolutely more than enough to help one person at a time. Hey,
yeah. And I can see that now, whereas 4 or 5 years ago when I started coaching, and you know, you're on social media and you look at these other coaches out there and you start comparing yourself from, like, you know, they got 5 years experience, 10 years experience, and you're just starting, and you think to yourself, fuck, I need to have 20 people in my program, I need to have 10 one-on-one clients, and I need to be making this much. And that just stops you from actually taking any action. I certainly struggled with that for a long time. Even though I was having clients and running a group program, it was still not enough, because from what I was seeing externally to me, it was like, oh, that's how you run a coaching business. Like, that's how many clients you need. That's how many wins you need. But that's why I love I guess now with Forging Excalibur is it's that it's not about the money. It's not about, you know, any of that or followers, you know, all of that, those numbers. It's just about quality results for the people that are in our trainings. It's as simple as that. And as long as we're doing that, then, you know, we're living our purpose.
Yeah, 100%. And I loved how you shared, so that you then, obviously that seed was planted when you're in India, and then you went into your job and spent, you know, quite some time there before you began to discover, you know, your purpose. What do you think, like, what was the catalyst? So was it, you said you proposed to your wife, were there other elements that really caused you to go, is there more for me?
So when I had my knee reconstruction, so in 2014, I just got out of a long-term relationship and I had two family members pass away. There was just a lot going on at that time. And not being able to work as well for 3 or 4 months as well. So a lot of my day was just spent working on myself physically, you know, going to rehab and physio and hydrotherapy. But then for the rest of the day, like, I didn't really know what to do. And I don't know how it came up, or this was kind of when Instagram was just starting. And somehow I found this book called The Aladdin Factor. So it's by Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen. And I read that book, and it's such a simple self-help book. And I liked it because it was speaking about Aladdin, and it was using the lamp as an analogy to kind of self-help. So it was through that where it started to plant the seed of, oh, maybe there's more that I can do in life. Maybe I can actually achieve my goals or dreams, because up until that point, I was very content. Like, I was happy with my work. Oh, I thought I was content, right? But on a deeper level, there was some stirrings going on. So on the surface, I was kind of happy. I had friends, I had family. I was in a relationship. I could see myself in 30 years doing the same thing of my role. So, but then reading this book, listening to podcasts and, you know, like Gary Vee and Tony Robbins and all these other, you know, big kind of personalities, they start speaking about what more can you do, like, you know, what is your purpose in life. So that was, you know, that precedes my first coach, but all those little bits put me on, you know, that journey. And then I'd say more recently, 2 years ago when I met Michael Laurier, I was just at a point in my life where my coaching business wasn't necessarily moving forward. And I realized I wasn't, you know, all those stirrings I was having was just because I didn't have purpose. Like, I wasn't living to my core values. They were to other people's. So I was still motivated, you know, by external, you know, parts of my life, whether it was people or social media. It wasn't really me. And I wasn't, you know, trusting my gut as much and intuition. It was more just, let's take action. Let's do some things. You know, let's do this strategy. It wasn't actually aligned with who I am. And going through the process over the past 2 years, you know, now I'm at a point where I feel much more aligned, like, with purpose and with my core values of wisdom, service, and legacy. So now those deep stirrings that I used to have of discomfort aren't necessarily there, or they are there, but in a much bigger way. And that's okay with me. Like, cause I know I'm on like a, I know as I grow, those stirrings are going to be bigger and bigger. But that's okay with me, cause I've got a lot more resources at my disposal to actually overcome them and to move through them.
Yeah. Nice. And you have that clarity and that direction now, right? Like, you know, it's always been so interesting to me as a coach. When I, you know, was learning about coaching myself, it wasn't really communicated to me that people would discover their life purpose as such, because my focus was more on mental health, on regulating your nervous system, developing a more resilient mindset. And I remember as an early coach, early in my coaching, realizing, wow, you never know what's going to come out of these coaching programs. It's always so, I'm always intrigued to hear, oh, I wonder what's going to come out of this particular program. And, you know, people will say, you know what, I'm really passionate about gardening. Like, it literally could be anything, yeah. Right? Like, it could be anything that they're just super passionate about. And then all of a sudden they start a landscaping business, or they start a product-based business or something. Or they discover what really lights them up and what gives them a sense of meaning and purpose is spending more quality time with family and friends, you know. I would love to hear from your perspective, have you noticed with your clients, like, have you got any interesting stories come out of people finding their purpose?
So it's funny. It's a really good question. I've had one client who would always do things. Like, he just wanted to tick boxes all the time. So if I asked for him to, do some like physical training or cold showers, meditate, journal, like all those things, he would tick the boxes. And when I was running this specific group program, we had a track sheet where we would, do 7 or 8 things a day, which, leaved us feeling filled, on a emotional level, spiritual level, on a physical level, that would just, fill our cups. So he would tick the boxes. And at the end of the training, he got to like 99%. Like, that's what he did. Like, I would keep a percentage of like how much you actually showed up and did the things. And he was, the highest by far. And his kind of purpose evolved, and it didn't happen through our training together. It happened actually afterwards, but the catalyst was formed during the training. And that was letting go of a lot of ideas and stories that he was telling himself because of obviously his upbringing and his family members around him. And he just continued that process of what we went through in our training together. And it was afterwards that he quit his job of teaching, and he just went and got like a sales job, and he learned how to communicate with people. And then he did that for a few months, and then he went back into like being of service, which was around it was kind of like a big brother kind of work. So like, he would take young teens out, young men out, and spend the day with them, and go to the shops or play sports or whatever it might be. And then that kind of grew. So it is funny how like we've all gone through different roles and different jobs and careers where we think, oh, this is it, but it just keeps evolving. So he's probably the one which sticks out the most, because he came into it with a very different mindset. Because the reason why he did everything was because of this low self-esteem. Like, he needed to prove his self-worth. He needed to check boxes. He needed to exceed expectations because of, his parents would have that high standard for him. And that pushed the pressure onto him. So when he was able to have that learning, like at the end of our training together, and then, no, I don't need to do what my parents want me to do. And that was the reason why he went and just got that sales job, because it was completely out of left field for him. It was out of his comfort zone, speaking to people, with multiple people on a daily basis. So, that's a story which I think kind of shows that your purpose just comes up in different ways. And it's through taking action and trying new things which you'll fall into. It's never how you plan, right? Like, he didn't plan to go on that journey, but it was what he needed. And now he's in a role which, you know, he exceeds that because he doesn't have the pressure from his family anymore because he's more comfortable with himself to actually have that role.
And then the other piece that I see as well is a renewed appreciation for perhaps, you know, if you have your own business, which is, you know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to have your own business or whatever job that you have. Sometimes we can lose our passion. Sometimes it's not the job for us. Yeah. I have seen occasions where it's really been a breath of fresh air. They've gone, oh, actually, you know what? I was just annoyed at that one coworker, and I just carried that energy with me throughout, you know, my whole workplace. And now I actually really love my job. And if I left my job, I would have regretted it. So I think that sense of purpose, fulfillment, and I think that sense of like renewed appreciation is so massive.
Yeah, because when I was starting, you know, my coaching business 3-4 years ago, obviously I didn't have the clients to be sustainable. So I went and did door-to-door sales, and it was through, I needed to do that to build communication skills, to learn how to build rapport with people very quickly, to be around people that were actually motivated and energized and driven. And that really inspired me. I remember my first day, there was another guy, he had been there for a few years, and I thought he was like 27, 28 years old, probably my age, you know. He was like 19, and I was like, how do you have this like presence about yourself? Like, how have you actually, most 19-year-olds these days don't have the level of drive that this young man had, or any kind of purpose, or mature is like a very easy word to use, but he just had this maturity about him. And then as like we grew and worked together, you know, I'd hear stories of like, oh, you know, he wasn't always like that. He did come in as a very fresh 18-year-old out of school, but you just grow, right? And that goes to your point of being in an environment which is very supportive. And that's what he had. He was around 30, 40 other young, driven people where he had to raise his standard. He had to actually show up differently. And what comes with that is a lot of challenges because we want certainty in our life. But certainty really does come at a price, and that comes with the challenges and the fear of whatever it is that we're going through. So having that appreciation of past roles, past jobs, past coaches, mentors, all of that, on how you, on who you are right now is so important.
Yeah, nothing is ever a waste of time, hey? Like even when you fail, everything that you learned, things that seem completely irrelevant to what you do now, they can be connected and to positively impact what you do now.
Yeah, exactly. When I was in my past career, there was lots of days where I could have just just numb myself with whatever, but I use those times, especially the latter half when I started reading books and podcasts and getting to self-help, I would use those times to actually be creative and actually think in my mind, like, what am I going to be doing in 5 years time? Like what businesses am I going to be starting? What people am I going to be around? I just kept visualizing myself out of my current state. And it was just because I had that time to do so. And now, 6-7 years later, things are actually progressing, and I can see those things that I was visualizing back then actually being a part of my day-to-day life now. And it's so cool to see that, on how much we really do create our experience of life.
It is. And it requires, you know, a level of presence to be able to look back and have that awareness of, oh, I've actually have achieved, or I have grown. Look at the progress. You know, I think progress is a great word. Look at the progress that I've made. And I can really relate to, you know, I remember when I had my first two children. So I've got four in total. But I had my first two, and then I started getting calls from recruiters because I still had, I think I still had a profile on Seek or something. And people were starting to call me and offer me jobs, and I just did not answer. And I'm like, oh, why do I have such a resistance to even listening to voicemails or to responding to messages? To answering calls, why do I have such a resistance right now? You know, and I'm receiving all this correspondence, and it's not like these were terrible jobs either.
Yeah.
But there was this little voice inside that said, that's not what's for you. And I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm going to be settling. Mm. I feel like I would be settling because it would just be so easy. Yeah. For me to just fall back into something that I was generally good at. It was okay, maybe not so fulfilling, but I would have been like, eh. But I didn't want to settle. Yeah. I wanted to give myself the permission to really drop into that piece of self-actualization, to like discover, well, who actually am I and what am I here to do?
Yeah, and it's so easy to take the safe option in life. Mm. And we're wired to want safety and certainty. And especially because if there's a financial element to it, I find it's even more difficult because everyone has different money beliefs and all have a different upbringing around money. But we've all heard the same sayings, you know, money doesn't grow on a tree, money's hard to come by. And this first was true for me when probably, 4 or 5 years ago, I remember my uncle saying, you know, save your money. And that was something which my parents instilled in me. Like, I didn't see any of my money till like I was probably my 20s, because my dad would take care of it and he would just put everything, every dollar I earned was in my bank account. And it was good because I was able to do some resourceful things with it once I had it. But it was always about saving money. And my uncle said to me, you know, you have to save your money because it's very hard to come by now. And in my head, that was the first point where I broke off that tie of maybe for you. Like, maybe for you it's hard to come by, but for me it's quite easy. And the financial aspect of leaning into riskiness and uncertainty is very difficult for people because we have these beliefs that get instilled around money from a young age. And, you know, it's everywhere. You know, fear runs the world. It really does. And we've seen that over the past couple of years now. Mm-hmm. But when we're able to lean into that discomfort of, fuck, maybe I don't have a job, maybe, you know, this is paying less, or to give an example for myself and my wife last year quit her job as a pharmacist to become a personal trainer. And there was lots in there for her around money beliefs, because, you know, she's literally starting her own business or in personal training. She's not going to be having the income that she did at being a pharmacist. So there was a lot she had to learn. But I know from my experience being through door-to-door sales and being 100% commission and having a business, that discomfort, the more you lean into it and the more you're okay with it and you kind of surrender to it in a way, the more things kind of come about. And, you know, now 12 months later, she has a very sustainable personal training business because, you know, we were able to push through a lot of the troubles. And yeah, we're able to learn from my experience 3-4 years ago of having a coaching business and then move that into her. And, you know, she is much more comfortable now, even though sometimes it's like, you know, we both feel like, let's just or she feels like, you know, let me just go be a pharmacist again, being the safe option. But, you know, that's not her purpose. You know, you have to lean into that discomfort.
Mm, and because we don't, you know, I would rather try something and fail. Like, obviously we want to take a calculated risk, but I just, the cost of regret is so high that, you know, you think about people on their deathbed and they're like, I really wish I tried Latin dancing. I really wish I told that person how I felt. Yeah. The cost of regret is just too high.
Exactly. And yeah, being safe and not taking risk is literally going to lead you there, unfortunately. So, yeah.
And I think it's that investing in yourself as well is when it comes to these money things. And like, I know for myself, investing in myself to begin with, all my stories were, oh, okay, well, I'm basically a stay-at-home mum now, because I am not working. The idea of investing in myself, you know, even it even was reflected in, like, I'd gone to Kmart one day and literally spent like $200 to $300 on random stuff for my children. And then I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I saw a Mars bar and I thought, I actually really feel like a Mars bar today. And it was like a dollar, I think. It was like really cheap, $1, $2. And then I noticed myself be like, oh no, I don't want to spend any extra money. Mm. Like, what a load of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, right? And it's like catching yourself, and like, that's quite a common thing for parents, and, you know, definitely for mums, like the guilt. So just that first initial investing into yourself to discover what your purpose may be, is such a big moment, and it just creates that momentum, doesn't it?
Yeah, because fear is, there's, when we're feeling helpless or feelings or emotions of shame and guilt for kind of where we're at in life, there's never any movement there. You know, we're not pulling ourselves out of those times necessarily. Chances are we actually need someone or something to kind of pull you out, whether that's, you know, a book or a coach, mentor, listening to a podcast. Yes, you know, I said that we don't pull ourselves out, but sometimes there's something needs to help you or guide you out of those times. So, yeah, there's no movement. But once we invest in ourselves, or we have a coach or mentor who stretch our thinking and give us the contrast of where we're at, then that's when we can actually, you know, take responsibility for where we're at, and then take the action and take responsibility for taking us out of where we are and getting us into a place where we are living by our purpose and we have a set, you know, core values which make our decisions easier for us. And then we can get, like you said, that momentum rolling. Because life just does become a lot easier when you have purpose. You know, you don't rely on anything external to have energy, because you just have that inside of you. You have that burning desire, I guess, to move forward and to take action and do things. But of course, there's going to be challenges as well, but it's a lot easier once you find your purpose to then actually live every day.
Mm. And you're so right, like all the different beliefs, it can really feel like going against the status quo, you know. That can be that edgy piece of, you know, my friends might say I'm a loser for trying this, or my parents might say, what a waste of money. Why would you spend your money on something like that? You know?
Yeah. I would hate to tell my parents how much money I've spent on myself in terms of investing. Like, honestly, it'd be, they'd be shocked.
Yeah. 100%. And and it's just, It is such a big moment, I think, that piece of choosing to back yourself, and I'm investing in myself. You know, it's a commitment. It's a promise that you're making to yourself. You're backing yourself. You're saying, I don't know where this is going, but I'm just going to trust this process. And I know that something powerful is going to come out of this. It's going to help get me closer to the answer that I don't know that I even need or want.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to have a level of openness in this moment because I want to experience more of myself and what's in the world.
I've learned that lesson recently, whereas before it was, if I do this program or training or workshop, I would say to myself, I'm going to do this 100%. I'm going to take every bit of action. I'm going to do everything the coach, mentor tells me to do. And, you know, I'm going to get the result. Mm. But it wasn't from a place of surrendering or trusting that I was going to do the work. It was like me just pressuring myself that, you know, you're going to do this work. It's like you're spending this money. You're going to do it.
Yeah.
And it never worked out. It never worked out having that pressure on myself instead of just invest. Now it's more invest in myself and realize I'm going to do or take any action that I need to and trust that it's going to get me the result, whatever that looks like. Whereas before it was like, I needed to do this action because this is the result that I want, but it's not necessarily the result that I need or is actually aligned with who I am. You know, now I have a bit better discernment around what I'm going to do or what I'm going to invest in. Whereas before it was like, no, I need to invest in everything.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I wouldn't get anywhere.
Yes. Anyone listening to this, don't invest in absolutely everything. you don't want to overstretch yourself too, because I do see that happen in the coaching space as well. People constantly signing up to things that they're not in the space to be doing. But and that discernment piece, it is important. It definitely is important. And I think it's that in leading with intention. Like, I think that if that's when we find ourselves in trouble, isn't it? When we kind of get like, never believe that in the hype. Like, don't get caught up in the hype. I think that's probably the message. Yeah. Like, for me, what I've observed, don't get caught up in the hype and to just drop back into your intention. What is your intention? Like, feel into your body. Like, does this feel aligned for you?
Yeah, I definitely would buy into the hype all the time with every program, training. You know, I would just buy into the result, and I wanted that result so badly that I would take any avenue to get there. And it didn't mean me just taking one piece of action. Like, I had to take every piece of action. I had to cover all bases, you know, and I have to do different trainings and I had to learn everything instead of just listening to your gut and intuition. It's like, no, all you need to do is just this.
Okay, yeah. Like, cool. Do you need every certification that exists under the sun? Maybe not. Like, I think that mastery, I really think that, try lots of different things, but then I think we have to make sure that we're applying what we learn as well, instead of, now I'm learning the new thing. Okay, cool. Have you actually mastered the current thing, and are you actually putting it into practice?
Yeah, I'm this way now with books. I used to read every single book, and after a while you just realize that they're all just a lot of self-help books just regurgitate the same kind of things, and every different author puts their own spin on it, basically. So now I'm more reading books that are kind of old or ancient or over 100 years old, because the knowledge back then, you know, even just thousands of years ago, is still so relevant now. And I think, you know, we've, as a society or the earth, we've gone so far away from being spiritual beings that it's strange. This is just something now that I'm starting to kind of realize and look into more.
Oh yeah, you and me both, Nicholas. Like, I would say, like, the last 2 years, because I'm, you know, I have Indigenous heritage as well, always find it fascinating discovering more and then looking into all ancient type things. literally, you know, ETs, religion, wisdom, all of that juicy stuff is definitely things that I'm reading at the moment too.
Cool. That's probably a different conversation then.
Totally different conversation. Yeah. That's but good. But it's so right. Like, you know, you don't need to read a book every single week. You can
it's
take
such a waste of time.
Yeah, right. Like, how are you gonna keep that information like in your mind?
Exactly.
The key takeaways. Yeah. Yeah, and it's kind of just getting caught up in just doing, just lots of doing and not being.
Yeah, I felt that a lot in my 20s. I did a lot of things and I would just try everything and I would want, like you said, learn everything, get all the qualifications, learn from everybody. But it wasn't authentic to me and it wasn't who I wanted to be in the future. You know, I didn't need to read probably the 10, 20, 30 books that I did last year. Like I probably could have only just read 2 or 3 and actually applied them a lot more to see a much better result. And that goes down to mastery, doesn't it? Just choosing a few things that you want to be really good at, because they're the people that people remember in a way. It's the people that have invested their whole life in one thing, and they're the ones that have mastery. They're the ones that leave a real legacy behind. Whereas the people that just do a bit of everything, you know, when do you kind of hear about them?
Yeah. Here's this person. They were good at everything. Yeah. And it's like, I don't want to be, I am one of those people who are generally tend to be good at lots of things, but getting stuck in, it's like, well, I want to be exceptional at something though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that goes down to like knowing your purpose and then making decisions based on that, based on your... you know, cutting out a lot of things of your life and then being kind of streamlined in your life of every day doing things which align with your purpose. And, you know, every now and then try something new because you're always going to get something from that or learn something, but keeping your core, like of your time invested in your purpose, like whatever it might be, you know, there's obviously the 80-20 principle, which, now I'm starting to learn a bit more about too, which has really been able to make my life a lot more efficient and me cutting out a lot of the shit that I was doing that I don't have to do anymore, or all the results that I was getting from doing all that shit wasn't actually a lot. So cutting it out and then just being totally invested in a handful of things which actually move the needle.
It does help you to really stay grounded and centered because your focus isn't so spread, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I've when I first started, say 6-7 years ago, that was me. I was always chasing the next thing. It was, you know, I had shiny object syndrome really bad. Like I just wanted to the next business, the next idea, like just starting multiple things at the same time. Like if I had just invested in one thing for the past 8 years, like where would that have led me to? Being clear on just try something out, like try one thing. If you've never done, let's say, this work before, just try one thing for an extended period of time and see where that leads you. Instead of trying 10 different things over the next year, just focus on one or two, see what happens then.
Very great advice. This has been a great discussion about purpose and focusing on like what actually is important, what's going to move the needle. So it's been so amazing to have you on the podcast, Nick. I've got a couple of questions to close off this episode. So my first question is, what is your definition of spirituality?
Oof. That's deep. I think for me, I grew up Catholic in an Italian family and culture. So obviously Catholicism is very profound in my family. So going to India showed me a different level of spirituality, which, you know, I wasn't, I guess, aware of at that time, because obviously I went to Catholic schools growing up. So, and then now as a, as an adult, being spiritual is very individualized. I think everyone has their own definition, obviously, of spirituality. So to put it into a definition, man, I'm really stuck on that one. Wasn't expecting that question at all, Jess.
we can come back to it.
Okay.
The questions probably aren't going to get easier. Okay. Going to get more intense.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, okay, cool. So the next question is, what do you think happens when we die?
I think we go to a different place. And it's not physical. I think it's very, I was about to say spiritual. I think it's just a different space where it's filled with energy and not necessarily anything physical, if that makes sense. So I think this is our physical world or physical dimension. And then when we die, our spirit leads us to a different dimension, which, it's funny this question's coming up. So I think we can reach those other places in this world. And I think we do, even just when we dream, we go to a different dimension or world or earth or whatever you want to call it. I think when we die, that's it. We leave our physical body here, but then our soul or spirit leaves us and goes to another place.
What advice, so say you have moved on to this non-physical world, what piece of advice would you like to leave for humanity? What would be like one core piece of advice that you would leave?
Okay. Don't be so stuck on your ideas and stories about life. Be curious about other people's perspectives, and that perhaps your way of doing life isn't the only way, that other people can, and other ways, other traditions, cultures, religions, they can offer you something. So just be curious about the world and earth and everything. Just be curious. That's basically it. Be curious about everything.
I love that message. It was really powerful. So the final question, so this is a fill in the blanks.
Okay.
So this is how people speak about you, whether you are here in this physical world or the non-physical. Nicholas was always...
The first word that came up was present. So I'm just going to go with that.
Nicholas taught me.
Nicholas taught me about myself.
Nicholas made me feel.
An individual, unique.
Love it. And would you like to come back to that first question? What is your definition of spirituality?
I think spirituality is having an understanding of the unknown or the things that we can't actually see here in this like physical world.
Beautiful. Awesome. How can everyone get in contact with you, Nick?
Mostly just Facebook and Instagram. So Nicholas Calabresi on both.
Yeah.
That'd be the easiest way.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks, Jess. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Get Coaching Podcast. Be sure to follow me over on Instagram at Jessica Palmer Official. And please, please, please do go ahead and subscribe over on Spotify, iTunes, and of course, Anchor here as well. And if you have any particular comments, questions, guest requests, I would love to hear them. Be sure to tag me, and I look forward to sharing the next episode with you.